All right, you guys, welcome to the show. How's it going? Good. Happy Friday. For those of you who work jobs with regular schedules and get the weekend off, for the rest of you, not happy Friday, just plain old Friday to you. Gotta work all weekend, that sucks. Been there, man. I am still there. I work 7 days. All right, hey, listen, guess what? They actually finally let Omar Khadr out of prison. Omar Khadr, the child soldier. Omar Khadr, who didn't kill the guy they said he killed. Omar Khadr, who, if he had, it's still in a war crime anyway, and he was a child soldier, and so not guilty anyway. Omar Khadr, who was tortured. Omar Khadr, who was brutalized in ways unimaginable and indescribable. Omar Khadr, who was the child prisoner at Guantanamo Bay, tortured further after his initial... I guess he got the worst of it, probably, in Afghanistan. And God knows what they did to him in Guantanamo, too. And then now he's been sitting in Canada as a convicted war criminal because he pled out in the hopes that this could happen, that he could be brought home to Canada and then through... judicial process in Canada, he would finally be freed, and his heroic lawyer, Dennis Edney, has done it, has got him out. And so here's him talking.
I would like to thank the court for trusting me and releasing me. I would like to thank my Dennis and Nate, my lawyers, and their families for all the work they've been working for such a long time. And I would like to thank the Canadian public for trusting me and giving me a chance. It might be sometimes, but I will prove to them that I'm more than what they thought of me. And I'll prove to them that I'm a good person. Thank you very much.
Omar, what do you want Canadians to know about you? What's most important for them to know?
Just to give me a chance. See who I am as a person, not as a name, and then they can make their own judgment after that.
Who are you as a person?
Well, I'm still learning about myself. I'm still growing. I believe in learning. I didn't have a lot of experience in life, and I'm excited to start my life.
What do you want to do most?
That's a hard question. Everything and nothing in particular, everything.
Omar, what do you want the American people to know? Do you have any message for
me? How old is he again? 28?
Well, I can just say that I'm sorry for the pain that might cause the families of the victims. And there's nothing I can do about the past, but I hope that the future can... I can do something about the future.
How do you feel right now?
I'm still in a bit of a shock. I'm happy, but I think I'm going to crash maybe sometime later. But I'm still very controlled.
Omar, what about the modern world shock at the moment since you've been out?
Nothing so far. What I'm really surprised is it's like freedom is way better than I thought. And the Canadian public so far has been way better than I anticipated.
Tell us what you did this afternoon,
or
what did you do from when
you... Tell us about the guards and the people in the courthouse.
Well, we went to lunch, and then we had to go back to the court to sign some papers. And
freedom is even better than I thought.
So with some of the sheriffs, they went out of the way to, you know, being kind. And, you know,
isn't that cool? I don't think you really call it justice being done, but... I'm happy for him that he seems to have this very forward-looking, positive attitude. Seems like he's going to be all right. Despite what the U.S. government did to him. Hell of a story. Hope he and his lawyer write a book about it. I hope it's about 600 pages long and tells the whole bloody story. Man. All right. Hey, guess what? Zoe Russell is going to be on the show. From RAMP, Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition. See, isn't this what I'm always trying to tell you guys? Us libertarians, we want to live in a libertarian society. we can't get every liberal and conservative to convert to libertarianism. But what we can do is emphasize the best parts of the right and the left to them, outflank their arguments on the left and the right, and push them in a more libertarian direction. Like, what if it defined conservatism to oppose ridiculous, wasteful, liberty-destroying government programs like the drug war? Huh. All of a sudden, you could be as law and order as hell, and that's why you're against the drug war, instead of why you're for it. Complaining that hippies like smoking weed, so please leave them alone, is not a very good argument. A better argument is, why would you rob your conservative next-door neighbor just to pick on a hippie? Anyway, something along those lines. Got to do something about this crazy drug war. And so here they are, they're doing it. And I don't even know if they're libertarians. I think they're not. I think they're conservative Republicans. And they've just had it with this drug war. So they're living my strategy. They are it. So that's cool. So Zoe Russell, she's going to be on the show. And Marcy Wheeler is going to be on the show. She's so damn smart, I don't know if I can even understand the things that she writes anymore, dude. It's like she's vibrating on this higher plane of knowledge where my brain stops. But yeah, she's down in the nitty-gritty, dude, on all of this NSA spy and what have you. And it's a lot. And she's got, you know, a top 10 most important articles by her for you to read just about the new USA Freedom Act. USA Freedom Redux, she's call it. And anyway, so obviously we're going to talk about the court decision, the federal appeals court decision yesterday, and the Freedom Redux Act and the rest of it with her. And I got tons of news, too. Tons of news. First of all, I haven't read this yet, but you could probably find it on antiwar.com. I already sent it to Eric. It's at The Intercept by Greenwald, Cora Currier. I like her, man. She's a good journalist, and I don't know Andrew Fishman. But anyway, U.S. government designated prominent Al Jazeera journalist as a member of Al-Qaeda. And they got this out of the Snowden documents. And obviously the guy's not Al-Qaeda, and they went and interviewed him. And he said, hell no, I'm not Al-Qaeda. What are you talking about, Al-Qaeda? I've interviewed Al-Qaeda because that's my job, because I'm a reporter. But no, I ain't freaking Al-Qaeda, he said. And but you know what? Kind of a great loophole that is. That means that they can persecute the hell out of him and investigate him and violate his rights. And this is brand new, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I'm just letting you know that such a thing exists. U.S. government designated prominent Al Jazeera journalist as a member of Al-Qaeda. It's at The Intercept right now. That's firstlook.org/The Intercept. It should just be TheIntercept.com, right? Because the First Look thing isn't even happening anyway, so it's just The Intercept. So shouldn't it just be The Intercept? And you can have all the old URLs forward. Anyway. All right. So, let's see. Which one is this? Oh, hey, check this out. Check it up. McCaskill seeks to overhaul programs that provide military gear to police. Senator Claire McCaskill, Claire McCaskill has a new bill where police would no longer be able to obtain the heavy armored vehicles used by troops in Afghanistan and Iraq, the MRAPs. And she said they're not designed for policing and we don't like that kind of thing. And they're not flexible or nimble enough to provide the kind of protection the police officers need. There you go. Outflanking the right on the right. Anyway, so a little bit of progress here. Keep shouting. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you could hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything.
I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples and email me scott@scotthorton.org for more information. See you there. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
All right, guys. Scott Horton Show. Zoe Russell coming up on the war on weed here in Texas. And Marcy Wheeler on all the NSA stuff. And I got a ton of other news I got to get to here. First of all, do I have a story about this? I do. Streets shut as 30,000 flock to Brian Moore's funeral. So this is a young cop from Nassau County, wherever the hell it was, I forgot. Doesn't matter. Anyway, a local cop got killed by a criminal cop killer guy. And so 30,000 cops came out from all around the country. JetBlue and these other airlines gave free travel to the cops. Is that right? They really give them the free travel? Let me page down here. Did I read that right, man? I missed it. Yeah, free airfare. JetBlue has offered free airfare to any officer who would like to attend Moore's funeral service. That's a direct quote. Thanks for that, the guy who sent it to me. So, you know, here's the thing. I mean, geez, he didn't have that many good friends, right? 30,000 people. What's going on there? And I think this is really important. The implications, as Bill Hicks might say, are vast. And so far, unknowable in their totality. But what's happening here is the cops are very much feeling the victim right now. They've pushed it so far in abusing everybody, not just racial minorities, but everybody, that they went ahead, they blew it, basically. They went ahead and picked on too many people who have the capability of fighting back, and they just murdered too many people too much in a row in an age of cell phones and Facebook and Twitter. And it reached a critical mass of even everybody's, you know, housewife, stepmom is into this. Like, whoa, what is the deal with police brutality these days kind of thing? And so now, oh, boo-hoo for them. Nobody likes the cops anymore. I guess the whole society are all a bunch of criminals. Otherwise, why wouldn't we like cops? Why don't we love these guys who are virtually threatening to kill us all at any moment, if they think we dare? And so they are feeling very put out and very hurt feelings right now. And I don't think that we could overstate that or overestimate just how hurt the feelings of American cops are right now. What do you mean you don't like it that we kill you guys all day, every day? Hundreds of SWAT raids across America every day. I mean, just think of that. Balco did his great talk at FFF, the Future Freedom Foundation conference, where he explained SWAT teams were for crisis situations, hostage situations, bank robberies. And then, well, geez, we got a SWAT team, so let's have 10,000 of them, 20,000 of them, and let's use them for, I don't know, how about drug raids? Oh, yeah, we're doing no-knock drug raids, so we ought to use the SWAT team for the no-knock, because, hey, it's dangerous breaking in someone's house in the middle of the night. And then, hey, just another step from that, we got these SWAT teams around. We got so many of them now. We ought to just use them for every warrant. We ought to just use them for riot control and use them for traffic control. And just, we ought to outright turn every deputy sheriff into, you know, a wannabe special forces officer, operator, as they like to call themselves. they took it way out of control. And anyway, sorry, I forgot my train of thought there. But the point is that what do they mean by showing up in those kind of numbers, 30,000 for this? Like, they think that the American public is at war with them, and that, so what are they going to do? It's not like they think that the criminals are at war against them. They think everybody is, because it's everybody who feels warred against. And so this kind of solidarity among Praetorians is pretty dangerous. I don't know, man. It's not like there's going to be a police coup d'etat in May, later this month, or anything like that. But, you know, for every action, there's a reaction. On some level, it's got to be possible to roll back the abuse a little bit somehow if it's done just right. It could be just as easy into provoking them into being that much worse. You see how a few teenage kids break some windows and steal some Doritos from a pharmacy, and they turn that into L.A. riot-sized, you know, real problem, which, of course, it wasn't. They can make anything out of anything. They can make a mountain out of any molehill. And, of course, science says that deaths of cops in the line of duty are at all-time low. And most of those are traffic deaths anyway, never mind the people that they kill in traffic, because never mind them. No justice when a cop kills somebody because he's speeding with his lights off. Ever, ever, ever. Even if he's off duty, probably. But, yeah, whatever, dude. I don't know, man. I'm sick of talking about this. That's why I can't remember what I'm trying to say. It's because I don't talk about it anymore. The cops, they think that you are out to get them. So be very careful of them. That's all I'm trying to say. And see, they don't understand, because when they hate something, they break it, right? They hurt people whenever they feel like it. And so even if they don't hate you, they just hit you over the head for fun, right? Just for looking at them funny or anything. They'll kill you for looking at him funny, like what happened to Freddie Gray. But so they think that anybody who hates them means to do them physical harm. They think if you're a cop hater, then you must be plotting something like the Unabomber or something. Because that's how they are. They're violent, so they just assume that about everybody else. And if they think that the whole country's out to get them, God knows what they'll do, you know? Go home from this funeral and crack some more skulls than usual is what they're going to do. Prove just who made who around here. The cops made us to serve them. That's why we exist, so that we can pay their salaries and do what they say, or else. And they're going to get it straight. They're going to make sure we got it straight. Predictable enough. Okay, good. Saudi's using U.S. supplied cluster bombs in Yemen. Cluster bombs? Yeah, cluster bombs. That's how the Americans do war, cluster bombs. Despite talk of a humanitarian pause, yeah, Kerry said something about that. Yeah, right, whatever. Saudis vow to keep attacking Yemen. What the hell is their strategy here? They have no ground force to invade with. They're just going to keep bombing Yemen until the Houthis just leave the capital city and allow the guy they just ran out of power to take power again. They really ran him out of power 6 months ago. Is that really what they think is going to happen? Is that the end of their game? I guess.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more war in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. First up on the show today is Zoe Russell. She is the Assistant Executive Director of RAMP, Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition. If you can believe that. Welcome to the show. Zoe, how are you?
I'm well. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Thanks for doing the show. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. I am a big fan of yours.
Oh, cool. Well, that's very nice to hear. All right. So, you know what's even nicer to hear than that is this. Texas House panel approves full legalization of marijuana. That's the Houston Chronicle today. Boy, I must be living in the future or something. What is going on?
It is the future. It's 2015. It's about time, don't you think?
Yeah, well, way past time, but yeah, I still can't believe it though, actually. I would get back to me in 2035 or something, but really. So tell me what's going on here with this. Is this a real thing?
Yes, it's a real thing. Representative David Simpson put himself way out there on the line when he filed this bill, and he took a leadership position and worked really, really hard on communicating this bill to his members, especially those on the Criminal Jurisprudence Committee with him. And I'd heard whispers for a while that he had lined up the votes to get this out of committee. And we had been working really, really hard in addition to his bill on HB 507. And we were having a hard time getting that one voted out of committee. So I was thinking, you know, Representative Simpson is really the man, because he got even an added vote from ours. He got Republican Todd Hunter supportive of his bill. So we'll see where it goes from here in calendars. I think that passing out of committee surprised a lot of people in that building. So that alone is a victory for me, because I get to go back in the Capitol building and say, you know, so I guess y'all didn't expect this. So we had more support than you thought. And the more and more people hear from their constituents, I bet you it's going to be positive feedback for them. And more people will take a stand like David Simpson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and it seems important, at least according to the Chronicle story here, that this guy Simpson is not some rhino liberal Republican Lincoln Chafee type or something. They call him a deeply conservative member supported by the Tea Party, and who cited God and said, hey, I don't believe that God made when God made marijuana, he made a mistake that government needs to fix. So right on.
Right.
Get him from the right.
He came in with the several Tea Party candidates. I mean, and there are still Tea Party candidates coming into the Texas legislature every year. And he came in probably the first wave of Tea Party candidates and had to take time to really form relationships with other legislators, because I think they probably wrote him off early on. And he is just one of the most thoughtful, sincere people that you will meet. So it coming from him, you know that this is not a political ploy, or it's not something he's trying to be goofy about. He's thought long and hard and prayed about it, and that's why he filed this bill. So it is important that he is carrying it.
Wow. Okay. Now, so the Houston Chronicle, though, says, well, this is nice, but it's not going to pass. There's no chance that it's actually going to pass the full House. What about that?
Well, I would say that there is a chance that it could pass the full House, but I'd say passing the full legislature in time, passing the Senate would probably be a harder task. I think the Senate is more conservative on this issue, or whatever you want to have conservative to mean to you. So I think that a floor debate would be excellent. And I don't think that you can write off that they would kill the bill in the House floor that easily. But it is very, we don't have a lot of time. So in that sense, there's not a lot of time to get it through the full process and signed by the governor.
You know, I don't even know who the lieutenant governor is right now.
It's Dan Patrick.
Dan Patrick. So tell me about him, because he's the dictator of the Senate, basically, right?
Right. Well, Dan Patrick, the interesting thing about the Senate is they just passed a low THC marijuana oil bill. And it's a very, very restrictive, no, like almost zero psychoactive component, you know, the THC part, all CBD and only for intractable epilepsy. And you have to go through two specialized doctors to get at it. But it's a recognition of the validity of marijuana as medicine by the Senate, and it passed 26-5. So I think that we're entering a new time where Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick on the campaign trail was, you know, made very obvious statements that he was against any change in marijuana laws. But when you get into the more nuanced discussions about how much money changing, you know, the criminal penalties could save the state, I think that he's, you know, more thoughtful than that. And then, but he is very conservative. And listening to the testimony on the Senate side, the questions that they had on the oil bill only, you know, definitely gave me the viewpoint that the Senate was going to be a tougher sell.
Yeah. Well, I could definitely see that. And I guess the interest groups, and maybe we could, you know, get to which all interest groups are on the other side of this, but they probably focus more of their attention on the Senate anyway, because that's where all the power really lies. So,
right. And, but they recognize too that everything in that building is incrementalism. So they don't want these bills advancing out of committee, and they don't want the bill advancing out of calendars. And they certainly don't want this discussion to happen on the House floor, because as you know, marijuana has basically been swept under the rug, and any information that's spoken about marijuana is misinformation. And that's the way that these laws have been maintained for so long. So discussion in and of itself about the kind of savings and the actual success of prohibition. I mean, we should be at the point where we're putting the opposition on their toes to defend their policy. What good has it gotten us? Why are kids still finding marijuana in their high schools? So, you know, they maybe they're working on the Senate, but they probably are disappointed that their work in the House hasn't gotten them as far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a very important point there about the discussion itself and how it's waged, that put the burden of proof on them to justify it after the quantitative failure over all this time and all of that. But let me ask you this. Does David Simpson have much of a relationship with Dan Patrick? Do you know?
I think that Representative Simpson, I don't know how close he is with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, but I do know that Representative Simpson is supported by groups that are also very supportive of Lieutenant Governor Patrick. Mm-hmm. So they're not so far off on wavelengths. And these groups that like Representative Simpson are very important policy groups in the state. Mm-hmm. So I don't see David Simpson being, you know, put to the side. I see him only gaining influence in Texas.
Well, that's good to hear, at least as far as this issue is concerned. And now, so Patrick, assuming that he's an Enlightenment guy and can be persuaded about this at all, what he needs is armor on his right flank, right? That's why I'm so excited about your group and about this brand new news breaking about David Simpson, this Republican David Simpson being behind this effort and this whole thing, because you have to outflank the right on the right in order to, you know, make the old interventionist prohibition seem, you know, like really what it is, right? A social engineering experiment on the part of big government that has not panned out and has cost us all our liberty and cost us all a bunch of money, just like any conservative could argue about any other government program. Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. And so now it's time to undo the mistake and that kind of thing. And then it doesn't matter whether the hippies like it or not, right? They're not even part of the argument. The whole argument is a conservative, business, Christian, Texas Republican argument that it's time to stop pursuing this policy that does not work. So, you know, the more groups on the right can be won over to this cause and can be, you know, signed up on the list of all the right-wing groups that will still support you, Lieutenant Governor, if you do get right on this. You know, that seems to be, like, probably the most effective thing that we could pursue right now.
Right. It's you know, so we could, you know, get into the Tea Party scene. He's got a big Tea Party backing. Dan Patrick does. So we'd have to get into the Tea Party scene and explain the fiscal cost to them, and also maybe some of the border discussion. And also, we really need law enforcement
to
take
up. Exactly. That's what I was about to say. Get police groups that are willing to have honest discussion about this involved too. All right. I'm sorry. We got to take this break. We'll be right back, everybody, with Zoe Russell from RAMP. Republicans against marijuana prohibition here in Texas. In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions? Well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The next of these great workshops is Saturday, April 25th in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It's just $15. For more information, go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. Hey, y'all, Scott here for MyHeroesThink.com. They sell beautiful 7-inch busts of libertarian heroes Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, Ron Paul, and Harry Brown. These finely crafted statues from MyHeroesThink.com make excellent decorations for your desktop at work, bookends for your shelves, or gifts for that special individualist in your life. They're also all available in colors now, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. Coming soon, Hayek, Hazlitt, Carlin. Use promo code Scott Horton and save $5 at MyHeroesThink.com. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Zoe Russell, Assistant Executive Director of RAMP, Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition. And the big news is that some Republicans passed, at least out of committee, in the House of Representatives here in Texas yesterday, a bill to just completely legalize weed. And as you mentioned, you guys already had a bill that you had introduced there, Zoe. And so I wonder then if you guys' bill can be the compromise. Oh, well, let's not go quite that far. Let's just do the one that we had already proposed. What about that? You think that'll get anywhere?
I think that it's definitely helpful to have that bill out there that looks like a more extreme version. It's almost kind of what happened on the medical side. There was the low THC oil bill, which was filed, and then the full medical marijuana program, which was filed. So it was like, okay, well, we have picked out this one condition that we feel has more medical viability, and then maybe next session we'll get to these other qualifying conditions that you have in this bigger bill. So it is always nice to have like a, I call it a menu of options. I mean, we had 11 marijuana related bills filed in the session, and I have a sheet. I don't use this anymore because some of them are dead, but I would have the sheet and go around and be like, okay, which one can I sell to you? You know, if I can sell you on a reduction of the penalty for a small amount of marijuana from a class B misdemeanor to a class C misdemeanor, which is like a speeding ticket, then, you know, that's progress to me. So I would always just try and show what all is out there that people are talking about. And then the other good thing is with David Simpson's bill, it forces people to have the logical conversation about the entire war on marijuana.
Mm-hmm. And now, have you seen much movement among these legislators? I mean, other than this obvious thing here, but in all you're talking to them, do they seem like they're warming up to this?
Yes, there are definitely lawmakers that are learning a lot more. And I would say that the medical marijuana hearing, the testimony was very compelling. And I feel like the progress made on most all of the committee members has been exceptional. It's just the chairwoman that is not going to change her mind on it. But on the criminal side, it is a resonating topic, and it's resonating because everybody's thinking the same thing. I mean, in Houston and in Dallas and in Austin, each city has kind of a program to divert the marijuana user away from being arrested. And Travis County has been around the longest, and Houston and Dallas are new. So those are driven by law enforcement. I mean, everyone across the board recognizes that marijuana users are an extremely low priority, but what they don't face is that it accounts for, I mean, in a lot of places, about 10% of all the arrests. So 1 in 10 arrests is for a marijuana user, and you're using all your court and law enforcement resources for that. So, like, my feeling is that most Republicans agree with this concept across the board, but they either want to say that marijuana is not their priority, that it's not a priority, or that it's too controversial for them to take on. So those are that's where we need to chip away, and that's what we're doing within RAMP to generate that real support within the primary base.
Mm-hmm. And especially make that point like you just made. These are police-driven policies in these major cities where the cops are telling the city council, look, can you please just free us from having to deal with this? I mean, they'll still use it as an excuse if they want to arrest you for something, but if they don't have to and they don't feel like it, they don't have to anymore, you know? So.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and it's saving money, and it saves money, and is public safety any worse for it? The lobbyist that works with Marijuana Policy Project, like, told me this, and I thought it was just so brilliant, and I hadn't even thought of it before. Would you walk into a room and make a joke about rape or auto theft, or, you know, any other crime that has a victim? No, but you, every single room you walk into, there's a joke about marijuana. That shows that this is not a question of public safety. This is a question of public policy. And when they fall back on marijuana drivers, well, that's a lazy answer, because people can very well smoke at home and go drive right now without anything in their possession. And if you don't have a way to catch it now, it's still a problem now. So I think that was exactly right, that if we're laughing at this as a topic, it's not that scary of a topic, and it doesn't need to be a crime.
Right. Yeah, I mean, most of these politicians, all they care about is how they look and how it'll affect their political future. And so if they get the idea that they'll look better if they are for liberalizing these laws, and that's exactly what they'll do. But that's the impression that they've got to get. And so now, and I use the term liberalizing loosely,
right,
here, because again, you're from Republicans against marijuana prohibition, trying to conservatize the pot laws by getting rid of them too. Here, is that the right word?
Right.
I just made up.
Yeah.
Tell us about RAMP, please, Zoe.
Sure. Our founders are Bob and Ann Lee, and Bob recently passed away at the age of 90. So we love Bob and know that he's still with us in spirit, big time. Ann is 85, and their son is actually Richard Lee of Oaksterdam University. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. In the early 90s, he had a workplace accident that put him into the wheelchair as a paraplegic, and he had severe issues with nerve pain and muscle spasticity. And he discovered marijuana as medicine way back in the early 90s, which was, you know, new for this, and relatively new. And so he told his parents, marijuana is my medicine. And that was a sea change, what Ann calls a sea change in her life. It took her a lot of study and trusting in her son and prayer. And the first time in her life, she realized the government had lied to her about something. Excuse me. And she's been a Republican since the Goldwater days, her and Bob. And they've been in Harris County for forever. So then she took on marijuana as one of her mantles, as her main issue, because she just couldn't conceive that her son, who, you know, moved to California in 1995 after the vote passed, he opened up a business, and he's been in the marijuana industry, and Oaksterdam University is known as the Princeton of Pot. It's a trade school that teaches classes on marijuana. It's like the first of its kind in the U.S. And so she can't rationalize why he is a criminal, why he should be locked up for that. And he has been raided by the DEA. So it's come very close to her to be a reality of her son being in jail. She started RAMP. She thought of RAMP in 2012, and it was her and Bob with a brochure in Harris County Republican Party circles and all the other, you know, groups, Republican women, the groups that she's affiliated with. And about a year, January 2014, myself and a couple other young people thought, this is something that we can run with in the GOP in Texas. And we should make this into a more structured thing and help Ann spread this message. And Ann is such a great messenger. I mean, so many people in the GOP already knew about Ann. And one of our biggest successes was getting a medical marijuana resolution through to the point where it was, we got it passed on the temporary platform committee at the state GOP convention. Then the permanent committee passed a marijuana resolution, and then we argued it in front of a body of 7,000 delegates on the floor. And so, like I said before, it's just about information, getting information out there. And that kind of discussion is really making waves in the GOP. And like, the more they see these documentaries like Weed, you can't deny it. You can't deny the medical aspect, at least.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, so CNN has Weed 1, Weed 2, and Weed 3. They've made documentaries over, you know, since I think 2013, when Sanjay Gupta came out with a big mea culpa that he was wrong about medical marijuana, and he's changing his mind and doubling down. And so they're really great documentaries to show a beginner on marijuana.
Right. Yeah, I know that about him being good on it now. So yeah, now I read an article, as we discussed before at the FFF thing. I read an article, probably in the Houston Chronicle, I guess, about Ann Lee, and you talk about her being a great messenger. Yeah, she sure is, because according to this reporter, the reporter really got it and really did a great job of profiling her and the message and just what a a conservative, down-home Texas kind of a message it is to go ahead and legalize pot and make it the conservative thing to do and all that kind of thing. And it really came through very well in the article. And that's not usually that easy to get a newspaper reporter to do, to get something really right in context, you know. And it seemed like they did a real good job, and it makes for a great story, right? You say she's 80, how many years old now?
85.
So there's this 85-year-old, very conservative, Goldwater Republican from Houston, Texas, leading the fight to legalize marijuana in this state. That itself is a huge headline and makes all kind of waves. And now, I'm sorry, we're very short on time, but could you tell me a little bit about the interest groups that are against this that you know of? Was there? I take it you were spending a lot of time on Capitol Hill there. Down on 11th Street lobbying. Was there much pushback, and from who?
There is some pushback. The biggest group that is like actively opposing us is the Sheriff's Association. I want to say the good news is the Texas Association of Business is supporting HB 507. So that's something for your callers to know if they call into offices in support of that, Texas Association of Business. The people that were concerned about HB 507's process at the beginning were the DA Association, the District and County Attorneys Association. But I think they've backed off a little because the fine amount was raised to cover some of the filing fees they would have incurred. And probably, you know, there's CLEAT, Combined Law Enforcement Association of Texas, and TMPA, which I think is the Texas Police and Municipal Association, something like that. And I don't think they're actively opposing this, but certainly it's my belief that, law enforcement and prosecutors and DAs within these districts are calling on their reps and telling them to oppose this kind of stuff. That's my prediction. But these association groups, besides the Sheriff's Association, haven't taken a hard stance testifying against it.
Well, very easy for me to say. You're the one who has to do the hard work, but you need to take those enemies and make them friends and just line them up on your side.
Right. I agree with you completely. And that's what we really want to do, is just say, what are your concerns? You know, like, can we just talk about what the concerns are beyond just the rhetoric, beyond the sound bites? I want to have a real conversation here. So that's what we're going to try and do, and just, you know, finish out this session strong as possible, but not go anywhere. We're just going to keep working even harder for 2017.
Yeah, sounds like you're making great progress there. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, Zoe.
Thank you so much. And if anyone wants to find us, we're at rampgop.org, rampgop.org.
Okay, right on. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, so that's Zoe Russell, Assistant Executive Director of RAMP, Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition. Again, rampgop.org. And we'll be right back with Marcy Wheeler in just a sec. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
All right, guys, welcome back.
It's the show, my show, the Scott Horton Show. I got Empty Wheel on the line, Marcy Wheeler, the brilliant genius behind the blog Empty Wheel at emptywheel.net.
Hey there.
Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Oh, yesterday was a pretty good day. I'm pretty good.
Okay, good. Very happy to hear it. Anything you want to tell us, or? Just a good day.
Yeah. So finally we got a court to say that the dragnet's illegal.
Now, I was certain that you were going to say that, yeah, but, and it was going to rain all over my parade, but you actually sound pretty happy.
Oh, well, I can rain on your parade.
Oh, go ahead then.
No, look, I mean, for one of the reasons I've been opposing USA Freedom Act going back to November is that I think that it's really important to get the courts to weigh in on the dragnet. And I knew that the ACLU's Alex Abdo had stomped all over DOJ's arguments when he argued this case back September. Because ACLU does business with Verizon. And so ACLU, like most of us, including me, can now claim to actually have standing to challenge the dragnet. And they did it, and they made a tremendously good argument that makes for good TV. And guess what? And they got a panel at the circuit court that had been lied to by the government about past surveillance claims. So it was perfectly set up for the opinion we got yesterday, which basically said that it didn't get into the constitutional question because they said, well, we don't need to, but we will if you keep illegally dragnetting. But they basically said USA Freedom Act does not permit you, in the name of relevant to a counterterrorism organization, it does not permit you to collect every American's phone record. So this is not legal.
All right. Now, I know you got Freedom Act on the brain, but you meant to say Patriot Act there, right?
Yes.
Just making sure everybody's clear.
Of the Patriot Act. Hey, you caught, good catch. Thank you.
Yeah, well, hey, you're the expert on the details here. But yeah, no, and look, we're about to get to your list of 10 important articles about the USA Freedom Act. So it's easy to see why you could have made that mistake accidentally while you're explaining here. Mind on the big picture.
But the other really important thing about the decision yesterday is that the problem is that the way the government got to collect all of our records is they went to their secret court and they said, we've got this kind of standing FBI terrorism investigation and everybody's phone records are relevant to it. And that's the part of the program that the Second Circuit beat down. And that's really important because that term, relevant to, is what they used to collect all of our internet metadata. It's what the DEA used to collect all of our phone records. So that phrase, relevant to, has become kind of a nuclear bomb that the government wields in secret to be able to surveil all of us. And the Second Circuit just dropped a nuclear bomb on their nuclear bomb, and now we're having fun, at least.
Wow. Okay, so now, yeah, that's a really big deal there. Because, okay, now, so make this clear to me. They didn't say that Section 215 of the Patriot Act goes too far and is null and void. What they said was the Section 215 of the Patriot Act does not say what the executive branch pretends to believe it says, giving themselves the excuse to do what they've done. And for that matter, the FISA court to give them that permission to do so.
Yes, that's exactly right. They didn't overturn Section 215 at all. They said you can still go use it to collect on Scott Horton and Marcia Wheeler by name if you're investigating them and it's not an assessment. But you can't use it. Congress did not envision that you would use that law to collect on every single American. So you can't do it.
And now you're saying that once they scored this victory with their secret, illegal interpretation of Patriot Act Section 215 there, that they have been overly reliant on this loophole, it sounds like you think, invoking the term relevant to apply to this, that, and the other thing, and that now this could cause a real crisis in their programs, no?
Yes. They shut down, like they claim to have shut down the DEA dragnet. They've claimed to have shut down the internet dragnet. But still, they're using that term relevant to for a whole bunch of things. And, well, it doesn't draw a line in the sand. The court doesn't say here's where relevant to is reasonable and here's where it's not. That basically, you know, sends a message that it's not what they've been doing is not reasonable. And I think it should, although who knows, because it's surveillance and we'll never know and everything happens in secret. But it should mean that they can't do what they've been doing, regardless of what happens in Congress over the next couple weeks.
Right. Although, didn't the court even say, we're not telling you to stop because we're going to let Congress go ahead and have a try at fixing it, at least?
No, they said it's gonna expire in 2 weeks. And keep in mind, I mean, so they heard the hearing for this back in September. And some of the precise language that showed up in this opinion, which was long, I mean, it was like 87, 97 pages, the main one, But nevertheless, that precise language that they used in their hearing last September, they used in this opinion, they knew, I got to believe, that they knew exactly what they were going to write for the last however many months is that. That's like eight months. And that they probably waited to see whether Congress would fix it on its own in November. And then, you know, I do think they waited until very timely fashion to drop this as Mitch McConnell starts talking about a clean reauthorization and so on and so forth, because this will create real problems for that. And I think it should. I mean, I don't think, you know, privacy skeptics, I don't think people who fight for privacy will use it as well as they should, but it should give skeptics of surveillance more leverage in negotiations over the next 2 weeks. I just think they'll mishandle it. So.
All right. So now, but can't they just go to FISA Amendments Act 702, which doesn't that legalize these general warrants? I mean, quote unquote, legalize these general warrants for.
No, they can't. Although, you know, my opinion of USA Freedom Act, which is not shared by the people who are boosters for it, but my opinion of USA Freedom Act is basically what it's going to do is bring metadata production for anything that resembles a call. So not just the call that you and I are having right now, but also Skype and iMessage and things like that, that they probably aren't collecting or aren't collecting all of right now. I think that they're going to go to the same prison providers and get them to use their Prism system to turn over data that way. So in other words, I'm beginning to call this Prism Lite, and I mean that very seriously. So I think that they will, under USA Freedom Act, use that same kind of infrastructure to turn over data quickly. But Section 702 can only be targeted at a foreigner. I mean, if you think about it, Section 702 can only be targeted at a foreigner, and it has to be done with the assistance of a U.S. provider. So if you've got a foreigner using Google, then they can and do get one hop of metadata off that. And FBI makes separate databases of the metadata that comes out of that collection, and they copy it and share it everywhere and so on and so forth. So they already do that with, I mean, that's one of the things that replaced the Internet dragnet after 2011 is just getting the meta, you know, fixing the way that they collect metadata off of existing Prism collection. But that can only be targeted at a foreigner. And so, you know, if you're the guy that they're going after, they can't target you in that fashion, and they can't target you in the United States in that fashion unless they have a whole lot more evidence against you, which is usually what they use the metadata for, is to get the evidence and give it to FISA court. So That's the reason they can't use 702 in that way. And the other thing is, most foreigners aren't getting their phone service from AT&T and Verizon. So they might be getting their iMessage service from Apple using an iPhone, right? But they're not getting their actual phone service from AT&T to Verizon. So, you know, you can't go to them to get one hop of phone dragnet data that way. They do get that overseas. You know, they steal everything overseas and get the metadata, and that's how they use it. But so they still need something in the United States to collect phone records if they want to target this conversation, for example, because neither of us is foreign.
Gotcha. All right. Now, hold it right there, everybody. We're going to be right back with Marcy Wheeler, the great Empty Wheel, at emptywheel.net. I wonder if I ever asked you why that's your name. Maybe I will on the other side of this break. And then more about the USA Freedom Act Redux after this. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders, quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, guys, welcome back to the show here. I got Marcy Wheeler on the line. Empty Wheel. I did want to ask you about that. I don't think I ever asked you about that. Maybe I did ask you about that. You know what it is? I think I remember asking you about that, but I don't remember what your answer was. We'll see if it rings a bell.
It's really not that exciting.
What's the answer?
My first initial is M. My middle initial is T. and my last name is Wheeler. And so when I first went to University of Michigan, my unique name on email was MT Wheel.
I gotcha. That's a cool story. That's a very cool story. And that actually proves that, no, I have not asked you that before because I would have remembered that.
See, what's the best about that is everyone thinks MT Wheel is like really zen. And the fact that it wasn't intended to be zen, but it is sort of zen, makes it all the more zen.
Yeah, it's great. It's doubly extra zen, like Winnie the Pooh. Okay. So now, everybody, if you go to emptywheel.net right now, Marcy's blog, here's what you'll find. You'll find a blog entry that's a top 10 list of articles you need to read by her about the new Freedom Act. And then the top one is a top 10 horrible things about the Freedom Act. I guess the rest of those articles are elaborating each of these major points, but maybe we'll just stick with the top one here. 10 goodies USA Freedom Redux, you call it, gives the intelligence community. Do tell.
Well, and let me be clear. This post was not intended to be the things I hate about USA Freedux, and I may get around to writing that post. I wrote this post because Mitch McConnell is running around saying, I'm going to do a straight reauthorization of this bill, blah, blah, blah. And that's, excuse my French, but that's BS, because there's too much that the intelligence community gets from this bill that they don't have now, or at least that they shouldn't have, given everything they've publicly claimed about the phone dragnet. So, for example, right now, all of the phone dragnet orders that the FISA court signs off on, they all say you can collect less any metadata. And that should limit the government to collecting things like your handset identifier, your SIM card identifier, phone calls that in some way or another cross the telephony system, okay? Delivered to your home on a telephone line or delivered to a cell tower on a telephone line. The USA Freedux is technology neutral. So it doesn't, it says you can use this to get call records, and it does name the device identifier and SIM card as one of the things that might be provided, but it never says this is just telephony call. And so I read that to mean that the intent, and there's good reason why this may be the intent, and this is why I'm sort of saying I don't necessarily hate these things about USA Freedex, but these are things that the IC loves. That there's very good reason. I mean, just for example, if you used iMessage over Wi-Fi, that likely bypasses the telephony system entirely. And the government knows this, and they want to get all the metadata from iMessages. And so it's likely that under USA Freedux, they'll go to Apple and say, can I have the metadata from all the calls of these bad people that we're tracking? And if they're really bad people, that's fine. You know, it's not such a bad deal that they'll be able to expand the kind of calls, broadly defined, that they're getting. But that is something that the IC, via numerous anonymous leaks, seems to be suggesting they can't get now and they'll be able to get under this new bill. Mm-hmm. That's just an example.
And you're saying this wouldn't be that bad, assuming these are legitimate criminal suspects and they have probable cause to do this kind of search, right?
Yeah, I mean, if everything works the way it should work, then it should mean that what Dragnet exists will be more. Let me give you an example. So the Tsarnaev brothers, right, the Boston Marathon bombers, the young brother Jahar, the guy who's still alive, he got his phone service cut off in the weeks leading up to the attack because one of his roommates didn't pay the bill. And that meant he was communicating to his brother exclusively over Skype. And had they had a real tip on these brothers, that means that the phone dragnet would have still been useless or of limited use because, especially because the brother was using a T-Mobile cell phone, which they also claim they don't get, although that's probably false. So in other words, there is very good reason to believe that some critical calls between the brothers that you would have wanted the metadata for would not be available under the current phone dragnet, but probably would be available under the USA Freedux. And that's what it's intended to do. So that should be a good thing. Maybe we can save three people's lives and, you know, the maiming of hundreds.
Yeah, assuming they stick to actual subjects worth investigating instead of persecuting all of us.
Bingo. So let me go to number three. Number two, very quickly, is right now the FISA court has approved an emergency provision for Section 215 for the Dragnet. So the government goes to the court to have them review these orders before they use the Dragnet, but in case of emergency, the government can bypass that and apply after the fact. USA Fredex extends that to all Section 215 usage. And again, there's a good reason for that, and that's that stuff the FBI used to collect using national security letters, so no court review. For a variety of reasons, they're now using Section 215 orders, which has court review, so that's a good thing, too. And the problem with that for the FBI is it takes a long time. So it would be nice, you know, I can see giving the FBI a way to get this more quickly. Again, they used to do this without any kind of court review. They'd still get the court review. It'd come after the fact. So they're extending the emergency provision. Probably a reasonable request. My concern, which is bullet number three, is that the way in which the current emergency procedure says if you get something under an emergency procedure and the FISA court reviews it after the fact and finds it illegal, the FISA court can make you throw out the data. That's not true under USA Fredex. Under USA Fredex, they can keep the data, and the Attorney General promises it never gets used in any kind of proceeding, but we know they parallel construct all this anyway. So it's going to, you know, they can still use the data, basically. So that's my concern, is it provides this loophole for the government to do illegal things, and I think that they would get away with it under this bill. So that's just an example. And that's one that's inexcusable. It shouldn't be there. Zoloftgren and Tedpo? That's right.
Yeah, I think so.
Tried to fix it in HJC, and Jim Sensenbrenner said fixing it would blow up the bill. So, you know, that leads me to believe they have ill intent, because it should be a nondescript fix to actually fix it.
Okay. And now, is there any chance you could do one more segment to go through the rest of the list, or you want to leave it at that and got to go?
No, I can do it, yeah.
Okay, cool. Because I know you like writing and got a lot of writing to do. But all right.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Hang tight, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Oh, you know what? Every time I don't blow the break, I'm early for it. Jesus, I'm so bad at this. It's completely ridiculous. I thought the only reason I wasn't hearing commercials is because I dumped the volume down on them, but I didn't. They just hadn't started yet, that's all. Christ's sake. All right, well, anyway. I got Marcy Wheeler on the line, emptywheel.net, for her zillions of great articles, including 10 goodies, USA Fredux. The new USA Freedom Act gives the intelligence community. Oh, God. Back in four. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. Talking with the great Marcy Wheeler from emptywheel.net about the new version of the USA Freedom Act, which I think, according to legend, started out as a real reform and turned into a Feinstein kind of a thing. And now, this is a really important point. Like all the points you make, Marcy, it's a complicated one, but I'm trying to get my head around it here. I think what you're telling me is that they have this emergency provision where they get to use Section 215 to collect a bunch of data on us. And then under this new law of the Patriot Act, and then under this new law, though, they get to keep it all, and there's no restriction on what they can do with it when they keep it, which means that they can take national security agencies spying with no kind of warrant at all type information and hand it off to other agencies to use to then create parallel construction bogus stories in order to build cases against
exactly.
People.
There is a restriction. They cannot. So say they collect all of my internet activity using Section 215, and then the court reviews it and says, oh, the only reason you picked on her is because of her protected First Amendment activities. And that's actually not implausible because the FISA court felt the need to add in a reminder for the government that they have to give, that they can't collect on people just for First Amendment reasons. So, so they collect on me. They've got the data. The FISA court says, wrong, bad use of the law. What the law says, what USA Freedom, Freedux says, is that they cannot use it in any official proceeding. So they, you know, they can't enter that evidence into a trial. They can't, you know, arguably can't use it to put me on the no-fly list. But that same language is used all the time in government. And what we know from a variety of reasons is what happens in FBI, and most of this data will come into the FBI, there's a department in the FBI where they'll look at something and then write it on a new piece of paper and go get a traditional subpoena for the same information and then hand the traditional subpoena information to a field office and say, look at this lead. And the FBI field office will only touch the traditional subpoena information. They'll never touch the USA Freedom Act information. But they'll be able to use it. So in other words, the FBI can, they don't have to take it out of their brain, out of their bureaucratic brain. They can act on the information. They just can't, you know, use it as evidence against, which they don't do anyway. They, you know, as it is, they do just what I said. They go and get a subpoena and never show you the actual data that they got from USA Freedom Act. Mm-hmm.
In other words, their rules for spying on you have long been loose enough for them to do all kinds of things to you or collect data on you in all kinds of ways that they can't use against you in court, but it doesn't matter. It still helps them build their case against you anyway. And then they just use other things against you in court when it comes to that.
Right, exactly.
And now, but isn't this somehow illegal, all this parallel construction? Is that the American way?
It's not the American way. I increasingly believe there's some kind of OLC memo that says this is all okay that we don't know about, but it shouldn't be okay. That's not the way the Fourth Amendment is supposed to work.
I mean, it sounds like in a sense it makes it where they can target people and then they can dig up all kinds of things on you in ways that would never stand up in court, but no matter. Then they just hand it over to somebody else, that kind of thing.
Right. Bingo. Exactly. Which
so, in other words, you really are the best example of this, is you're exactly the kind of person that they would try to target to see if they can get something on you, because otherwise you're going to keep writing at emptywheel.net, and they probably hate that.
I don't know. I think they've – I don't know. Whatever. Who knows? But the other thing that this bill does, which I'm fairly concerned about, is the way they've written the hops is weird. They haven't written the hops to say you can get one round of phone calls and you can get another round of phone calls. They've said you can get one round of call detail records, and there's some funny stuff in that definition. And then the second hop, they say you can use session identifying information to produce a second set of call detail records. And that suggests, particularly because of the way they've defined session identifying information, that suggests they could use either online activity, because online activity is defined in sessions as well, or they could use things like location. And it's not that the government would get your location data. It's that they would ask, you know, AT&T to use your location data to figure out who you've been meeting with or who you travel with or what have you. And then the government would give that information back to the government just in the form of you know, your travel companion's device identifier.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of thing that I think this bill allows. And there are, you know,
well,
even
and by
there,
hops,
there,
to be clear huh? about the hops thing, that means if I have somebody, their, you know, record on my cell phone and I call you, then if they're investigating somebody I talk to, now they can investigate everybody in your cell phone.
That's
what you're talking
about. That's
and,
my fear.
And on your computer and everything else.
Yeah, that's my fear. I think that if I'm right about what this hop does, I think there are good reasons for it as well. Because for reasonable reasons, although this is the kind of thing that really should be reviewed in a court because it's unclear how it's unclear how good their numbers are. I mean, if the accuracy on this is 95%, which some of what AT&T does, some of what AT&T very similar stuff does, you know, that's 5% people who are innocent who might get sucked in. So that's not necessarily a good thing. I mean, one of the uses for this hop is to go to AT&T and say, we think this person keeps getting a new cell phone. Can you figure out what the person's new likely cell phones are? And that's a technique that's used all the time in law enforcement. And you know, given how often bad guys get new cell phones, I shouldn't use that phrase, I'm sorry. Given how often people who are trying to hide their tracks get new cell phones, that's a legitimate use, probably, provided that the court can vet whether they're using good numbers. But I think the way they've written the amendment, it invites abuse. It invites the kind of thing you've said, which is that you're really going to get inside somebody's cell phone, you're really going to get inside somebody's browser, and once you do that, the sky's the limit. So that's my concern, is that, and frankly, nobody knows. I'm the only one in creation who's actually really, I'm not quite the only one in creation, but nobody knows what they're doing with this hop. And everyone just sort of assumes that it's a traditional hop, and that's not how it's written. And
is there a line graph somewhere that shows how many investigations with how many hops, equals how many total people, and how many, you know, investigations it would take at three hops to end up equaling, open access to the entire population of the country, basically?
There are a number of studies. PCLOB has some estimated numbers, which, of course, they've looked at the reality, so their numbers. And theirs were huge. I mean, they suggested, and I forget their numbers, but they suggested, like, millions that would get sucked up off of what the NSA is currently doing. There's a guy at Stanford who did some analysis of a group of 300 people and found that they were all connected at two hops, or almost everyone was connected at two hops, because they all subscribed to basically two or three cell phone carriers, and they were all calling to the same cell phone voicemail number.
Oh, yeah. What a great loophole that is.
Right. Now, as it is, NSA tries to take that stuff out. But the problem is that's not regulated. Nobody's going in to see. I mean, it's a way that NSA could set the aperture very broadly and could set it very narrowly. And no one really is overseeing it at that level. And so you're right. It could be, and I suspect it was set very broadly before 2009, and therefore they were sucking in completely innocent people, because once they had sucked them in, it gave them the right, if you will, to start looking into their underwear drawer.
Right. All right. And I'm sorry we're out of time, but everybody, that's good. Leave you hanging, wanting more. Go to 10 goodies. USA Freedux gives the intelligence community at emptywheel.net. Thanks, Marcy.
All right, take care.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Haha. Parody NSA Twitter just said, a journalist and a terrorist walk into a bar. He orders a drink. It's Marcy that they fear. All right. Anyway, hey, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Well, it didn't work out for today, but Monday, Avner, oh man, I better practice saying this. Gavariahu? I don't know. Anyway, a guy from Breaking the Silence, breakingthesilence.org.il. is going to be on the show to talk about their new study on Protective Edge, Israel's war against Gaza last summer. Soldiers' testimonies from Gaza. I'm actually glad it didn't work out for today, because I've only done a small portion of the work, really. I want to read a bunch of it. There's quite a bit. And maybe my further reading will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's all told from the point of view of admissions of the Israeli side. It's not even testimony of the Palestinian victims at all. It's just IDF saying, yep, this is what we did to them. Crying and shooting over there in Israel, like always. Breaking the silence. Avner something something is going to be on the show. I'm going to practice saying his name between now and then. All right, good. Now, this ain't the damnedest thing I ever saw. Did you ever see this? U.S. idea to lay blame in Syria chlorine attacks gets support. What? Did they just admit they were lying right in the headline? U.S. idea to lay blame in Syria chlorine attacks gets support. A large majority of U.N. Security Council members support a U.S. effort to create a way to attribute blame for chlorine attacks in Syria and are ready to move quickly in the next few days. But Syria, Syria ally Russia worries whether it will be objective, with the Russian ambassador saying they've done their attribution of blame already. That's the Associated Press. That's the way they put it. Now, I guess they're not really, maybe it's just bad phrasing. They're not saying they're trying to make up a bunch of claims to push. They got their claim. They're going to try to push it. Anyway, you know, some may have been poison over there. I'm not sure, but, you know, I saw the Moon of Alabama blog barely even trying and saying, oh, come on, this is ridiculous. Explain to me the first 15 inconsistencies that come right to my mind when I watch this, you know, video that you've prepared for me here. And especially when we've got the precedent of, Seymour Hersh and his great piece on the rat line, where the DIA and the CIA and the government of America, the official, the real government, the national security state, they wouldn't put their names on the line to say that Syria had done the sarin attack. So they didn't believe it was true. It was al-Nusra that did it with their friends, the Turks. By the way, Turkish officials take credit for al-Qaeda gains in northwest Syria. See? Al-Qaeda, their friends, the Turks. They were also, the Turks caught on the phone saying, maybe we'll cause an attack or fake an attack on our Turkish shrine inside Syria in order to have an excuse to invade. What about that? Caught on the phone talking about that. About a year ago now? Turkish officials take credit for Al-Qaeda gains in northwest Syria, say pact with Saudis aimed at accelerating Assad's ouster. Can you believe it that it's still the policy? Almost. It's May. We are 11 months out from the declaration of the caliphate by bin Laden incarnate, Omar Bakr al-Baghdadi. And America is still doing Israel, Saudi, and Turkey's dirty work in supporting the rebels against Assad, for regime change against Assad. So either they're mad out of their minds, or they're corrupt. They've been bought off. You know, last summer this was funny. A little, right? Wow, look everybody how difficult it is to turn the ship of state around. Jeez, we've been fighting for the Mujahideen against Assad for the past 3 years. We're going to have to slowly figure out how to reorient now that that's completely blown up in our face beyond all reason. And then, nope, here we are a year later. They're still, we're going to train up some rebels. Training up some rebels. We got the CIA training up some rebels, and we got the military training up some rebels, and they're going to get some rebels trained up. They're going to take good care of everything. And I love this headline. Where'd it go? Oh, I deleted it because I got a newer, better article about it. But the headline did read, Hezbollah attacks, and I was going to say this just in, Hezbollah attacks Al-Qaeda in Syria.
Oh, no wonder Israel and Turkey like Al-Qaeda in Syria so much if they're at war with Hezbollah. What the hell's that got to do with us? Why in the hell does that have America lined up on the side of our enemies? And that's just what our allies want. Fighting on the Iranian Shiite backside in the east, in Iraqi Shiistan, Baghdad, and all the land all the way to Kuwait. But in the west of the Islamic State, we're still backing basically the Islamic State. I mean, there is a separation in terms of leadership between al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda in Syria, and ISIS. But basically, you could look at it as Nusra are basically ISIS's useful idiots, do the worst, you know, the heaviest fighting for them, and then ISIS comes and takes over the territory, pushes them further ahead, but they get to consolidate the size of the caliphate all the time. And they'll end up merging back together, probably, you know. And on the other side, you got America working with Turkey, Israel, and Saudi to back the Mujahideen, even now, even 11 months after the declaration of the caliphate and the Islamic State and all this crap in Iraqi Sunni stand and in the west part of Iraq and the east part of Syria like this. It's crazy. Oh, it's corrupt. Yeah. Pretty sure that's the answer. And by the way, over in Iraqistan, they're getting their asses kicked. They can't even hold on to the Baiji refinery. The Islamic State is back. Okay, so you took Tikrit. That's all right. You just free up more resources to take your refinery back, or at least take it out of service. That's an interesting war there where both sides are very hesitant to actually damage the refinery. So everybody's got to be really careful as they kill each other there. Except then again, correct me when I'm wrong. James Rosen, writing in McClatchy, says U.S. planes are bombing the Islamic State militants at the besieged refinery. I don't know if they're really destroying the damn thing or not. You got American airstrikes now backing the Shiite militias, who way outnumber the Iraqi army. The Iraqi army and, of course, their Iranian leadership. And trying to take the... which side would you prefer to die for? I know, right? Me too. Neither. And then, no, really, you might think I'm joking, but really, they're announcing again another training scheme. Now, this one is in The Guardian. They're in Jordan. They're training up the rebels, and they're calling them anti-ISIS forces. Come on. If their priority was fighting ISIS, they'd be backing Assad again. And not that Assad was ever America's sock puppet there, really, but he used to cooperate with Clinton and Bush on the torture and murder of, jihadist captives. So, fighting that war for us. And then, this is really important too. Kurdish president, and they've been talking like this. It goes on and off and back and forth. Independence from Iraq coming. No immediate plans for secession, but yeah, we're going to have an independent state, he says. At the same time, Muqtada al-Sadr said any attempt to split up Iraq means he is going back to war, which I think he already has gone back to war some, but he's really pissed off, not just at the Kurds, but rumors of America trying to arm up a new separate Sunni army apart from the Shiite army of the Iraqi government. And he always has been the nationalist, Arab nationalist among the Shiite militia leaders. So, ugly son of a bitch, that guy.